Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Been getting some unseasonably cool weather. I say unseasonably. It is wintertime. It should be cold, but man, there for a little bit, it looked like we was just going to have an extended fall. But it's been cold, but the action's been hot. We've been getting some people getting on them winter fish, and today we're here to get the report from Peter John Cole. Peter, it's been a while. You been doing all right?
I have, Nick. I have. I appreciate it, man. You been doing okay?
Man, I've just been sitting here. We were doing the pregame warm-up talk. I've been watching my trail cameras, and then I'm sitting here at my work/fly-tying desk, and I'm starting to get me a little collection of clousers. So I'm starting to get ready for the end of deer season. So.
Woo! Well, you know, that is probably my most fish pattern. Actually, it ain't no question. That is my most fish pattern. That is in all variations of colors and styles. The only thing, there's only two things I stay real consistent with on my clousers, and that is I'm looking for no less than 1 3/4, no more than 3 inches, and red eyes. I don't care what the pattern, I don't care what the other colors are, I want red eyes on every one of them.
So now that I've heard that, I'm going to have to go back to the fly shop because I got some chartreuse eyes because I'm a chartreuse guy, but yeah, mine are sitting here. I just tied them natural, and I've got the natural tan hair up on top. I got some white hair down below. I got a little crystal flash, and then I got me some little chartreuse dumbbell eyes, but I'm going to have to cut them all apart, and I'm going to have to go get red now. Dang it.
Oh no, don't cut them apart. them chartreuse will fish too. I just, you know, I think we've had this conversation before. I know I've had it with many other fly fishermen, but I think half the time it's the fly that you have confidence in. If you know that's a fly that catches fish, it's going to catch fish. And if you fish something and you're like, I don't know how I feel about this, you know, I'm just going to try it out. It feels like more often than not, that's the direction it goes. Like you're going to fail with the things you think you're going to fail with, and you tend to succeed with the things that you have confidence in succeeding with.
There's definitely, and you could analyze the psychology behind that, right? But I think it boils down to, if you got your comfort lure, is you're just going to throw it more. You're going to throw the lure you like throwing more, and the lure that throw more, you're going to throw in front of more fish. And then I think too, like you said, like if somebody hands you something and they're like, oh, try this out, and you look at it and you're like, what is this goofy crap you've handed me? Like, you'll fish it, but you're just going through the motions. Right. And then if you get to a good spot where you're like, I don't know, man, like I've caught a lot of fish out this hole, you're going to be like, well, let me tie on my fly that I know works. And if you'd have kept fishing that goofy thing that you got handed and thrown it in that hole, well, you probably caught a fish. But
I promise you, it's probably one of the biggest, you know, psychological issues, especially guiding. It's one of the, I know, you know, you fish the run enough times, you fished it all throughout the years, all seasons of the year, and you're like, this fly works. Well, especially for me on the Cahaba, like when we're fishing the Cahaba, you get bite windows. Like those fish, they're not eating all day. So you can start the morning doing the right thing, and if you don't have that confidence in that fly, you can easily talk yourself out of doing the right thing. You can talk yourself into doing the wrong thing at the right time, if that makes sense. Where you've been fishing this fly all morning, you're not getting any bites, you know, you're just trying to work some fish magic, take your shoes off, light a cigarette, tell the clients all kinds of jokes and superstitions, and you know, just trying to drum one up. And you can definitely talk yourself out of using the right thing by like, man, I'm just not getting a bite. You know, why am I not getting a bite? Why is this not working right now? If you give it another 30 minutes, the bite window opens up, and then all of a sudden, like, you can't miss a fish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true. There's something to that confidence lure puts your mind at ease, and then stuff happens, you know, when you're not sitting there second guessing yourself. Like if you take that off the table where you're like, well, I know that's a good That's a good lure. A lot of times, if I'm hitting an area for the first time, a lot of times I'll hit it with a tub of night crawlers or a thing of live shiners, because I'm like, well, if I know one thing, it's that I know that bass hate shiners. Like, they're just gonna hit it, like,
Yeah,
or
they're gonna eat that.
like, you take that off, and then you're just like, well, okay, well, you're just looking for good water and good structure, and you're just taking that off the table, where it's one less thing you got to focus on. So
That's right.
I know I've fished all over Alabama now, and if I go fish something fresh, like, I've got my handful of three or four flies that I'm gonna throw, and go from there. And it gets in the way. I'll say this: it'll get in the way of trying something new. So a clouser was not really on my list of confidence flies until I found myself on a body of water over the holiday break, and I fished through my preferred flies, because I've not been tying like I should and keeping up with stuff in the winter. I've been too busy hunting deer. And so then I got
Ooh, I
to
know that feeling.
rummaging. Yep, you get to rummaging, and you're like, well, what do I have in here that's close? Like, what's the second best option? And I pulled out a clouser, and I'm like, well, I guess it's either clouser or just paddle back. And then you fish it for a couple of hours, and you go, huh, maybe there's something to them things. Maybe I'll tie a few more.
Might be something to that thing.
Maybe something to
So
it.
I'll tell
Maybe
you.
all them guys who say that they like it are right. Maybe it ain't that bad.
Yeah, especially in the warm months, that's when I lean hard on the clouser. So this time of year, I do two things. So I go smaller. So I really like woolly boogers, black, green, white, and brown. A little bit of flash. I like flash in general. So I either go down to a woolly booger and go really low and really slow, or I'm leaning hard in my cold months now, going with like an intermediate sink tip and some unweighted flies where you can fish them really, really slow, keep them out there, and just get that big blowy action, like your Chocolates Mini, like an unweighted peanut envy. What else? Deceiver patterns. Anything bait fish, but I like fishing it unweighted with that sink tip and just letting it drop down, giving it a little jig strip action, and just keeping it down there in front of their face. And it does really well. The other thing I love about cold fishing is it seems like all the little fish run and hide, and there's nothing but Gojiras out there eating.
Gojira, I like that. Yeah, I heard that from enough people over the past year or two that I finally gave it a try around the holidays. And yeah, they're there. I missed some big ones that I was not ready for. And the thing that I like too is, like, they it seems to, it surprised me how much fun it was. And it seems like the bite can be subtle, but they seem to commit more. Like, I got fewer pecks and taps,
Yes.
and sometimes, those top water bites are always fun and everything, but I feel like sometimes they're just more playing with it, aggravated at it, slapping at it. Like, sometimes it's like, man, all that commotion and that hook point didn't end up in your mouth. Like, what are
And
you doing
nothing.
out there? Like, well, like, are you eating your
So that's
mashed
another.
potatoes or playing with them, kid?
Yeah. So another thing that I had to do, and this was a lesson learned from last year, is like you're talking about that subtle bite. So if you'll run something with a trailer hook, something in the back, something with a hook, with a stinger in the back third of the fly, watch how quickly that hookup rate. How much it goes from them playing with it to you just start catching fish.
I like it. I do a lot of trailer hooks in conventional fishing, but I haven't yet got into tying flies with trailer hooks, but that's on my list of stuff to try at some point. I'm still in the early phase where you're trying stuff out and trying to get them classic patterns under your belt, and
Sure.
then you just start playing. And I'm getting there. I'm gonna get there eventually. So you talk about we're talk, kind of talking in general about the winter bite, but is that what's working for you specifically right now up on the Cahaba?
Yeah, specifically right now. Going smaller is working really well right now, as far as just if you're trying to pick up numbers, woolly boogers, peanut envies, clousers ain't bad. Anything to get down in the water column. 90% of the fish are in 10% of the water, and that might be underselling how that goes. So real deep pockets and all your ledges, anywhere where you got water dropping off, like specifically the portions of the cob I run, there's a lot of, good riffle runoffs, where you got, where it's pushing down into, where you got fresh oxygen pushing down into deeper water. They're loading up on those places right now. And so, and that's another thing, like, do not be afraid to fish the, if you catch a big one out of there, guess what? There's something they like. And this time of year, they're all going to be right there. And you will, and you can pull four or five out of one, the exact same run. You can pass it through the exact same place, and you just let them take turns on getting the bite.
Yeah, that was definitely the case. I did a little 10-mile stretch on a little local river, and it's actually surprisingly, it's got some sandstone that it flows through and stuff like that. And anywhere I was pulling over and fishing where you had that sandstone or them real deep undercut banks, like you said, in the course of 10 miles, I didn't find probably four or five places that looked real good, held enough water, deep water, but I got multiple bites at each place. And you were, just sitting there swinging something by the same little rock ledge or the same little tree root, that you could see down there, then and you knew it petered out into something different, a little bit deeper. And it worked, man. It's very different. I won't lie. I've spent most of my life, I put my fishing rod down come October 15th, and it doesn't get picked up again until at least deer season's gone, maybe until turkey season's over a lot of years. But I give it a good shake, guys. Guys like Peter Jordan and Steven Rockarts and Steve Graziano, like they finally got me to try that winter fly fishing, and it's a different game, but it's a fun game.
And to that, like heads of pools, so like this time of year, I don't really bother with the bottom end of a pool of a section. Like you said, I'm looking for undercut big structure, like big structure on deep water. And you may have to cast through there. You may have to give them 10 or 12 looks to pick that fish off. But again, back to our original point of the confidence thing. If you will trust your instincts, like if you look at it and you go, man, that's holding fish, stick with it. Give them, give it the old college try. Like really run it through there. Run it through. I would, personal opinion, run it through there until you've given them six or eight looks that you are really confident in. You know you were at depth. You know you were given the presentation you wanted. Be it the swing or your strip patterns were right. Switch up your strip patterns. Keep it slow this time of year. But that is my focus, is the direct head of a deep pool, and then any adjacent big structure, like on the Cahaba, we have, I mean, the whole, it's, there's a giant rock monolith down there, and we don't have grass, so you just got to fish it till you find them. And that's one of the keys, Rockerts and I have talked about several times now, is, you got to get out there and fish it all year, even when it's not really fun to traverse, being low water. But if you get out there in low water in the summertime, when it feels like it's a miserable trek, well, now all of a sudden you can see all this stuff and you can kind of bias confirm, like I found of the monoliths. So there was one that I just happened to find, and we pulled four fish over 17 inches off of it, off that one spot. And I was like, there is something under there that these fish love this time of year. And so sure enough, come back in the summertime, did a little solo canoe run, went over there, and I could see this huge chunk of rock under the water where normally it'd be covered up by another, in that particular spot, probably another 14 inches of water, and you'll never see it.
Yeah,
So.
he was on the show a while back, and he made a really good convincing case for scouting deer in low water, even if you got to drag and hike. And he's like, well, you do it, and then you just know, he's like, that
Yeah, it, I
information will be
mean,
good for a
then you,
while.
that's right. And it can, and especially if it's your first time on a piece of water, I would say that's when you want to hit it. Not necessarily for great fishing. Well, I got a whole another story for low water, but we ain't there right now. We can do that come spring. But low water will, especially with fly fishing, low water will let you see all the things that you don't normally get to put eyes on. And you can pick out structure, and you just got to commit that stuff to memory and know whenever you come back during high water, and there's a little more flow, then you're like, okay, well, obviously that's where they're going to want to hide right now. And I ain't going to say it's 10 out of 10, but 9.5 out of 10 times your intuition is going to be correct on that.
Yeah, it was definitely it him talking about it, like he really opened my eyes up to it. And then something else I think that he'd mentioned is that he he seems like he takes his scouting pretty seriously. I think he told me that he wouldn't guide a place unless he'd fished it for 2 years prior by himself, and just got a feel for it. And so I started thinking about that. I'm like, well, maybe I need to commit seriously some of these waterways I've started fishing around here. Like I just need to scout them for 2 years. Like fish them, take notes, drop pins on the pools, and just focus more on understanding and observing than catching fish. And it paid off quickly. Like 3 or 4 trips where you're like, I'm just out here for information, and then you get to where you can kind of sit there. It's the same thing hunting. I told a guy. Or I had a guy tell me when I was young, he said, when you scout a piece of property, he said, he said, you need to get, before you seriously try to kill deer on it, you need to get where you can sit me down and draw that place on a map. Get from memory. Like you need to be able to draw and say, well, there's a ridge here, and this is where the creek runs, and this is where the beaver's got his dam on the creek, and this over here is this cut over, and there's a scrape line that he's like, if you can draw that from memory and picture it and visualize it in your head, he's like, then you're ready to go kill deer. Like you can take new information on that piece of property and you can start connecting dots and see in your eye, like, okay, well, I saw him here and he was probably coming from here and going to here. That's a lot of success, man. Just being able to visualize and know what you're working with.
So I'll tell him myself on that. So when Steven brought me on, I had to deal with the imposter syndrome for a little while there. I was like, man, do I really know enough to do this? And it's, 24 was a bountiful year. And I finally got all that washed off of me for the most part. But there were two trips I did last year where I broke that rule. And it was two runs. One was a wade trip and one was. See, one was a wade trip and one was a float trip, and it was the first time I had ever done that float. But I just, I wanted to fish that piece of water, and I said, okay, I will do it. Just understand. Like, I will still do it. Just understand. And you know the same amount about this water. Now, that being said, thankfully, I've got enough buddies in the community that I called around and I got the 411 on that run of water, and we ended up having a pretty decent day out of it. As far as how to fish it, where to fish it, what to look for. And a lot of Alabama, when you're talking about the moving water, like our river systems, a lot of it fishes very, very, very similar. Now the difference in a good guide trip and a great guide trip is, like, I could give you a good guide trip on that piece of water, but I can give you a great guide trip on the Cahaba, because I can tell you what tree limb to cast under. And I can, I think Rockers and I have both been accused of feeding those fish and petting them on the head when we go by. But it's just, just time on target. You fish it so much, what's worth fishing and what's worth passing on by, so you can spend more time in the high probability areas. There's some holes on the Cahaba where, I mean, literally, say, hey, I'm gonna swing you around. You're not going to cast for the next 2 minutes, and I'm going to swing us around right here. Whenever you feel ready, you see that corner right there, I want you to cast 5 foot to the left of it. And then they pull a 18 or 20 inch fish out.
Yeah, it is definitely, and something that you said right there too, is a lot of times it's about eliminating woods or eliminating water. Look at it that way. Like instead of looking for where can I go catch a fish or where, can I go shoot a deer, just cross stuff off the list and go, well, this ain't worth fishing, And by the time
That's
you
right.
cross off all the places that ain't worth fishing, you got the places that is worth putting your time into. So it's a it I'm not there yet myself. I can stumble upon them every once in a while, and I have ambitions to be better than I am, but I've got a long way to go. But tell me a little bit. So we're still, I know that, this is a conversation that for a lot of guys, I know there's a lot of guys who are kind of fair weather anglers. Like there's the hardcore guys that fish all through the winter. There's the people who go chase deer, and there's people who wait for warmer stuff. But I know It don't feel like it right now. It's cold enough. It feels like spring will never get here. But when you look at a calendar, it's not that far out, and we'll be into it. What's your thoughts on what's coming up here in the next few weeks? What do you think, they'll stay on their current patterns, or do you think we'll start to see them change up a little bit?
No, I think they're going to stay right where they're at, and all the way up until if this year goes anything like last year and the year before, and I expect it will, unless there's some major weather shift. But we're going to be looking at mid-April before they shift off of where they're at right now, and that's Cahaba specifically. They're not gonna they're still going to be holding on these exact same places, exact same patterns, and it's going to be the same feed till middle of April.
Well, hey, that's good. Stability is good. That helps people. Everybody who's listening in right now, you just heard the winter pattern, and that's gonna hold on for a little bit. So
Yeah,
that.
get plenty of time and plenty of weekends between now and then to get out there and test it out and dial them in. And I'm telling you, if you want to catch really big fish, this is the time of year to do it.
Yeah, that's it. Time to go out there and hit them before all the deer hunters get tired and go out there and mess up all your spots.
Hey, that's I am one of said deer hunters, and that's the only thing keeping me off of it some weekends. But we've got a trip. I'll be out this weekend, the weekend after that, probably fishing the next 3 weekends. I'm gonna hit it pretty hard, really pin them down, because there's the Cahaba just has there's some really really big fish. If you happen to see my post in the Alabama Fly Fishing group, those photos that I posted in there were from early April. So, and that was, I think we had 4 or 5 fish over 17 inches that day. And that's a pretty exciting day when you get to net just chunks like that. And they were all 3.5 pounds plus. That's a lot of fish on a fly rod.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. That's a lot of fish on a conventional rod. I remind people, we've got in our head, 5 pound bass, 8 pound bass, and stuff like that. But down here where I'm at, I've watched our tournaments for years, and a lot of places, man. If you can put 5 3 pound fish in a boat down here where I'm at on the Delta with tournaments, you'll place if you don't win it. 15 pounds of fish win a lot of tournaments down here.
And especially for anybody that's a like a com, conventional anglers, you have that conversation with them, they're like, okay, guys that are fishing Lay or Gunnersville or Mitchell or something like
That's
that. It's
it.
like, oh, 3 pound spots, okay, there's pretty good fish. But there's a big difference between Alabama bass in Lay Lake and Alabama bass that live their whole life in the Cahaba River, and they're, fighting the current and everything else for their whole life. That's a different kind of fish.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you get off the reservoirs and the fish get smaller, but I've noticed that too, man. Like a 2 or 3 pound fish in current on a fly rod, like he'll give you a run for your money that you would not expect if you're used to fishing
No, you're
still water fish.
yeah, you got to be you better be holding on. You better be ready.
That's it. I had when I first started fly fishing in these little creeks, man, especially I got some places near me got Choctaw bass, and you would swear. You're like, oh, dude, this is gonna be a monster, Like, and then you pull them up, and you look at them, and you're like, dude, like, hey, you ain't half as big as I thought you were,
No.
fishing the rivers with some current and good clean water. The colors are brighter on them. I mean, those are fish living their best life right there, compared to the ones who are just sitting there stagnant. And like
Oh yeah.
they're smaller, but man, they're wiry. I tell you, they got some muscle on their frame.
And then you dial down to a 3 weight. So you go down to a 3 or 4 weight. If you catch a hand size bluegill, you got about, them bluegill give up on you pretty quick, but you got about 8 seconds of thinking you got a tank on, where you are just bowed up, like, oh no, what have I done? I done put myself in a bind.
Yeah, that them bluegill, man, you let them get out there, and they're usually in the slack water off in the
That's right.
pockets. But man, if he gets that big old broad body, if you sit there and you get him and you let him swing out in the current and he turns sideways, yeah, they'll fool you. And man, now I'm sitting here in the middle of winter and I got the fishing bug. I'm gonna have to go out there and get my waders and my wading boots. You're killing me,
Yeah, I'm
Peter.
glad I've
You're
already
killing
got.
me.
I know I'm glad I've already got plans, because I'm itching pretty bad right now.
I like it. Well,
Thankfully,
man.
I'll be hitting it this weekend, so scratch
Yep.
the itch.
I know y'all stay busy up there, and I know that y'all book up quick, but if folks are listening, they want to start planning some of them spring summertime floats, where's a good place to book a trip with you?
So they can go to flyfishingalabama.com, or check out Fly Fishing Alabama on Instagram, or Uncle Pete's Fly Fishing is my personal on Instagram as well. But if they go to flyfishingalabama.com, they'll get in touch with, that'll put them in touch with Stephen Rockerts, and he'll let me know, and we'll get them booked up. We'll go ahead and get them on the schedule. And yeah, we've got almost everybody from last year already calling in talking about trips for the spring and summer. So I expect we're probably going to get those fair weather days. Those are probably going to get booked out pretty quick this year.
Yes, sir. Well, guys, y'all go check them out. Check out Fly Fishing Alabama. Go check out Steven, Peter, and Andy up there. And Peter, as always, great to have you on the show. Stay warm this weekend, man, if you get out there.
Yes, sir. You do the same. I appreciate you having me on, Nick.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. This time we got the lost angler herself. We got Peter Jordan reporting in from LA. How you doing, Peter?
Doing great, Nick. Thanks for having me today, bud.
Absolutely. I've been meaning to get with you. I've got to find somebody to put me on. I got a trip coming up. I'm gonna try to float the Perdido. So we're gonna have to put our heads together on that.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's gonna be a fun trip. If not, we'll start real quick with kind of more of the scouting deal, run a canoe down it and maybe get the kiddos out there. So that should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
That should be a ton of fun. Ain't nothing like getting kids on the water.
That's it. That's it. I'm still recovering. I had a probably the toughest duck hunt I've ever been on. So, and I've been sick, so I've been out of the loop with the local conditions down here. But what's it looking like?
Man, it's tough conditions. There's no getting around it. It's cold and it's muddy. It's gonna produce a slow fishing scene, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible to catch fish. And it also doesn't mean that the quality of fish that you're gonna catch aren't pretty substantial. But you got to really understand what these fish are dealing with and what they're surrounded by, and the changes in forage, so that now you can be effective, or as effective as you can be during this time of year. Because the fact of the matter is, a lot of times, the biggest fish of the system, you're most likely to catch them this time of year. And when it's super cold, it's nasty, and it's just kind of tough. And the reason that is because these bigger fish are the most resilient to the cold. And so they're still feeding. So, like, a big fish didn't get to be big by being like, oh man, it's cold. I don't feel like eating today. No, they're constantly eating. Now, their forage changes. Where they locate to catch, to feed changes, and how they acclimate in the water system changes. And it changes down here different than it changes in other parts of the state. So, you've probably got plenty of people that can kind of wax poetically on what's changing in other parts of the state. And for me, coming from central Alabama to lower Alabama in college, it was different, So what I've been used to, when it got really cold, was we would start to see a turnover of vegetation in the fall, whereas here we're just now starting to see it. Like, it just now got cold enough to start getting vegetation turnover. And what I mean by that is it got cold enough that the upper level of like the shallower parts of the river system and lake or wherever you're at, they're starting to see die off of vegetation in the shallow. It's kind of like how your yard turns yellow and brown in the winter. It's the same thing. Like, basically, it's just going down to the roots, going down. But in that time period, what's happening is the decaying vegetation starts to give off CO2 as opposed to oxygen. So it becomes a very oxygen poor area. So this is mostly in your oxbows, in your lake areas, in your slow water, we're going to get that vegetation up. So think Bay Minette Basin or Bay Minette Creek, kind of that. Or think more your more weedy areas. Bay Minette just came up to mind because it was like a perfect storybook area. So, like, let's say you go to Busby's and you go hang a right, there's all those lily pads and all that. You're going to start to see that dying off. That's an example of those kinds of places where you're really going to see that marked difference in what was and what is. So, that being said, these fish are going to start to locate in more deep water areas because the vegetation further down in the water column is still alive and is still giving off oxygen and is still giving refuge to bait fish or, other prey species. But the prey kind of changes too. So, like during most of the year, bass, the number one thing that bass eat is brim, sunfish. Their number one thing. Number two thing they eat during most of the year, crawfish. Number three thing they like to eat, shad species. And then after that, they're very opportunistic. They'll eat anything else. Well, during this time of the year, those sunfish, they've really kind of tucked in super tight. They're going to really kind of stay out of the way. And these fish aren't going to be able to target them as much as they would normally like to target them. And they're going to be, the bass are going to have to become a little bit more of an open water fish as far as like getting off on points, getting off on ledges, getting to where they're a little bit more comfortable in the water system. So what they're going to start to shift to, and we talked about this last time, you asked me to chat on the show, was how these fish are going to start to really target in on shad species. So like your big gizzard shads, your Alabama shad, your American shad, all that kind of stuff, that's what they're really going to start to get into. With the winter, they're really going to start to really concentrate. The bigger bass are really going to concentrate on like those really big gizzard shad. You know those ones you see, we called them skipjack shad when I was a kid, just those big ones that can get 8, 10 inches or whatever. You might be shocked to know that these fish, our largest bass in the system, are eating those shad right now. And like a big brim, those same fish are going to shift over to eat that big brim during the rest of the year. So they're going to be, not to say that they won't eat the smaller shad, like a threadfin shad. They're super happy to do that too, but they're going to be really more concentrating on the bigger shad species. So they're going to set themselves up on creek mouths, points, things like that, especially if there's a thermal refuge, because, you and I talked about previously, there's a lot of creeks in Alabama, especially lower Alabama, that are spring fed. And as a result of them being spring fed, they're going to maintain a much more constant temperature throughout the entire year. So, like creeks that enter into Dog River, there's creeks that enter into Fowl River, upper part of Magnolia is completely spring fed. A lot of places in Fish River have a lot of places like that. Perdido and Styx, all those are going to have, spring fed influences. They're going to help to regulate those temperatures. So in those areas, it's going to be a little bit more like business as usual. But let's say we're in the Delta, or let's say we're in a little bit more of the river system around Mount Vernon, things like that. You really, really want to concentrate on points, ledges, drop-offs, and you want to look at places where you're not going to have a tremendous amount of current, even though your bigger fish are willing to do things, willing to eat. They are slowed down. Their metabolism has dropped, so they really don't want to stay in heavy current. So let's say we're fishing something like the Styx or Perdido. A lot of these fish are going to pull out of the faster moving water, and they're going to go further down river into more slack water areas. That's not to say there aren't some, some hanger owners that are staying in there, but for the most part, they're going to kind of pull out until they start to get that urge to spawn in the spring. Then they're going to come flooding right back in there. So keep that in mind, there are seasonal movements. So what we want to look for is after about 6 feet, water starts to insulate. I think it's 5 to 6 feet, somewhere in that ballpark. Water starts to insulate, and your water temperatures are going to stay more constant. So think of what you want to do is you want to start searching. I personally like to start searching right now about 5 feet, and then I work my way steadily down off a drop off. So if I'm on a ledge, or better yet, the best thing you can do this time of year is you find a point with a taper, and I'm going to work my way steadily down, starting in that fishing where I'm throwing my baits, my flies, whatever it may be, into that water that gets around 10, 15 feet deep. Okay. And if you're fly fishing, this goes back to the same thing I say over and over again. You guys, if you're not learning how to throw sinking lines, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Or you're a one trick pony, because then you're really limiting yourself to the first 3 to 5 feet of the water column. So learn how to throw your sinking lines if you're going to do that. Throwing a sinking line is like throwing a big old suspending jerkbait or a suspending jerkbait in general. I can stabilize my fly in the water to maintain a constant depth. So think about that for a minute. I'm throwing a fly in. I know that my fish that I'm targeting are sitting about, say there's, you go over with sonar and you see a school of bait packed in around 12 feet deep. Well, I'm throwing what we would call a sink six line. What that means is
that fly line is dropping 6 inches per second. Okay. So that means if I'm doing a countdown method, if I know that that's what I'm looking at is that 12 to 15 feet, I count to 30. And you have to, the biggest trick about throwing that sinking line though is you need to be able to cast far enough out with that sinking line so that, because where you're at on the boat, even though the line's dropping, as it's dropping, it's getting closer and closer to you. So imagine, you know, I tell folks all the time, hold your arm out flat, okay? And imagine that's as far as you've cast. Now bring your arm down. Just literally bring your hand down until you get to your leg, right? And that's how your fly line is dropping, okay? It's dropping down just like that. So if you notice, your reach, once you get about halfway down, isn't as far out as it was when you started. So be mindful of that, that you do need to remember that that fly line isn't falling wherever you cast that and dropping straight down to the bottom. It just doesn't work that way. So kind of keep those things in mind. Going on to what we were talking about the forage, okay? We did talk about how the shad are going to be a much more prevalent food source. That's not to say that they're not going to eat brim. They are genetic, you know, they're definitely programmed to eat sunfish species, but they're going to be much more targeted in on your more open water species like your threadfin, gizzards, and all that kind of stuff. So they are going to be a little bit more targeted into that. And one of the things that I kind of like to tell people is you also want to be mindful that this time of year, crawfish, they're gone. They're buried in the mud. They're out. Okay. So you need to start thinking, okay, well, if I'm trying to balance the bottom and I'm trying to do my thing, what are these fish eating? Well, if I'm in a faster moving river, like the Perdido or, you know, upper rivers like that, these fish are really going to start to concentrate more heavily on helgramites. So your larval form of the dragonfly, they can get really freaking big, man. I don't know if you've ever turned on any rocks and seen some helgramite larvae, but those things can be, gosh, a couple inches long, you know, 2, maybe 3 inches. Those things are beasts. And those bass know it. And they are super happy to take advantage of that rich food resource. So during this time of year, you might want to swap over to like a helgramite pattern if you're fly fishing in a river, or you might want to do like a smaller creature bait, like soft plastic, that's going to have that really, really buggy look to it. That can be really, really helpful this time of year. Next thing you want to remember is your salamander species, like your lesser sirenes and all that kind of stuff. They're still going to be prevalent. They still kind of like that oxygen-rich area. So that's why your critter baits work really, really well, like your brush hogs and all that, because it's still kind of emulating, you know, those random critters that we don't think about that live on the bottom. So crawfish are going to get scarce a little bit. Brim aren't going to be as prevalent, and they're going to start to concentrate on these other things. The next thing you want to remember is your bait fish, your prey species in the area, it's cold, and they are lethargic. So a lot of times, one of the biggest things I see is people that keep the same tempo of how they're fishing during the winter, that the same tempo they would have had during the fall or they'll have later in the spring. So they are moving that bait way, 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 way too fast. Slow it down. Put yourself in the mindset of how that prey species is acting. So like if I'm throwing a fly rod that day and I'm stripping my fly in, I want to remember that as I'm stripping the fly in, whether I'm giving action with rod tip or stripping it in or however I'm doing it, I have to emulate how that prey species is going to move right then. It's not going to be as fast. And also, too, those bass who are kind of lethargic themselves from the cold, they're going to want to really key in on that slower moving bait species that's maybe having a lot of trouble, right? So kind of think about that. They, you know, once those shad kind of lock up a little bit and they get a little bit too cold because they went up too high in the water column, those bass love taking advantage of that sort of situation. And if you're fishing, you know, down here right now, we're starting to see, like we talked last time about, you might start to see stripers. Striped bass are going to be seen in the Delta. They're going to be underneath Claiborne Lock and Dam. And if you're, you know, places like Lake Martin or whatever, you're going to find them on thermoclines. These striper species are super, they love the cold. They are happy as all get out. I can relate because I'm a fat boy in lower Alabama, and I have waited all year for this time of year. I am too chunky for this area, right? It is too hot most of the year, and I wait all year long to get projects done outside for this. And so striper are the same way. But if we're not targeting those fish, we have to remember that our fish species down here, like bass, are going to be a little bit more, man, I'm not really feeling it. Another thing you might want to concentrate on is your panfish, such as your crappie. Crappie are going to about start to come alive, man. They're really starting to start to take on. They're starting to get excited. They're ready to kind of do their thing. And again, whereas your largemouth are going to kind of, in my mind, what I always like to look for crappie this time of year is, I want to look at those slower moving oxbows, but in the deeper submerged cover, like the deeper timber. So like if I'm in the Delta, like the holy grail for me is finding that old cypress bowl, right? That's in that deeper water. And if I can find those kinds of places, oh my goodness, it's going to be a great time of year. And you and I talked about fly fishing for crappie yesterday, and that can be an extremely good way to do it, using things like sonar tips or just by remembering how far you cast. If you're just throwing a floating line and you want to throw a little woolly bugger or a little clouser, what you want to do is you want to really stretch that leader out, because the longer your leader is, and the leader, for those that don't fly fish, is the end of your fly line. You'll attach a piece of monofilament or fluorocarbon, whatever you want to. And sometimes you buy a taper leader. What happens is that's an extruded piece of nylon that gets thinner towards the tip. Or you can build one. We've talked about that on different episodes about how to build the leader. And what you want to do is you want to really kind of make it the longer leader, because the floating line at that point acts like a cork. I really like using floating lines to fish for crappie, because I watch the tip of my fly line. Like you might watch a, do you remember the, Nick, do you remember the old porcupine quill corks that, you know, bobbers that if a fish barely looked at it, it would drop?
I've got a desk drawer full of them and love a porcupine float.
So essentially, think of a fly line as a porcupine float. It literally does the same thing. So when I fish for, a lot of times, and I've said this numerous times, so like when I'm fishing for bass or something that's really going to smoke a fly, I like a muted color, like I like an olive green, or I like something maybe, I really love throwing intermediates because they're perfectly clear and they sink. When I'm fishing for crappie, I like a fly line that's bright, holy Jesus, yellow, orange, something, so I can really, really key into it. And another thing that I found to do that works really well for me is on the end of that really bright line, I take a Sharpie and I put two or three black marks, just black bars on there, because you may not see that solid line move, okay? But you'll see those places with the Sharpie move. So that can make it a lot easier. So if you're getting into crappie fishing right now, this time of year, and into the spring, and you only use a fly rod, that's a really good trick on how you can really detect strikes really easily. So just kind of remember, you know, in cold, their forage changes, the places they change. Another thing we've been dealing with lately is it's been raining a lot. We've had a lot of rain. Everything's up and everything is really muddy. So if we're, you know, down here in the Delta, or in our creeks and rivers, I'm going to look at it first from a conventional side. This is my favorite things to do during this time of year. One of them is I like to get a really nice, good size deep diving crankbait, and I like to just reel it nice and slow, let it bounce off the bottom. I'm not ripping it in. That's when those older reels that had that 5.3:1 gear ratio are really, really helpful. You know, just really slow it down, let it get down there. Let it bounce around, let it do its thing. That vibration from that big bill and as it knocks off of everything is going to be really, really helpful. I tend to kind of avoid, this is just me, this is not a hard, fast rule, I tend not to use things like rattle traps as much. Again, the fall and spring, I want that. I want that faster vibration. I want that loud rattle. I find that a little rattle's great, but a lot's too much, if that makes sense. I like to think of, think of it as the kids coming in the morning, you know, waking you up before you had your coffee, right? They're excited to see you, and you're excited to see them in about two cups of coffee, right? So that's the way these fish are. You're knocking through there with crankbait, go nice and slow, try not to make it too loud, and that works out really well. The next thing I like to do is I like to throw a large single-bladed Colorado spinnerbait, okay? So the old clothespin spinners are really great for this, those bigger ones. You throw a lot of vibration out, and you can also helicopter that down. So I don't know if you're familiar with helicopter, and I'm sure it's been discussed here by other folks. Essentially, what you're doing is you're taking that big Colorado-bladed spinnerbait, and you're slow rolling it. You get to a drop-off, and you just stop. And what happens is, as that spinnerbait drops, that Colorado blade just spins, and it really slows that drop on that spinnerbait, let it drop off that, and then slow roll it some more. I personally like to slow roll, lift up my rod tip, make it really go really quick, and let it helicopter down. Slow roll, lift, drop. Slow roll, lift, drop. I really freaking like that. That is one of my favorite little things to do. And if you guys haven't tried that with Redfish Magic, do it. Freaking works great. So those are some cool little tips. The next thing that I like during this time of year is I do like a suspended jerk bait. I do like a little bit bigger one, and you're going to dead stick it. So we're going to jerk it, give it that good erratic action, and just let it sit. Because remember, we talked about how those shad can get too high up into the water column and they get stunned by the cold. I think the same thing happening. They're going to most likely hit it when it's dead stop. So keep that in mind. And then the final thing is moving to creature baits as opposed to like crawfish and kind of going from there. You may not use lizards as much. And a lot of times large worms, like 9, 10 inch bigger worms work really, really well. It's just got that big action, drops on the bottom. And I think that kind of imitates more of that lesser sirene. If you guys aren't familiar with lesser sirene, they're just kind of I can't remember exactly what member species they are, but they're more closely, or like they think they're in the kind of same kind of family as like a hellbender, right? That kind of aquatic critter. And that can be super, super helpful. So these things, what you're doing is you're slowing down, you're throwing out good vibration. You're letting fish have plenty of time to see you. My recommendation for people is when you lift up slowly, let's say I'm picking up and jigging something off the bottom, I like to lift up real slow and just kind of shake my hand as I lift it and then let it drop. And I will count 10 before I move it again and really, really slow work it. So this isn't that time of year when you're going to jump in the bait boat or jump in the bass boat and turn and burn. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you might just flip jigs and run that spinner bait. And on a warm day, when that sun's been out, oh, that can be amazing. But in general, it's not really the time of year for it. If I'm fly fishing, I'm going to switch over. If I'm bouncing the bottom, you and I talked about it not too long ago, we're going to have Helgramite imitations. And like the kind of the sculpin imitation is going to be really, really helpful this time of year. And again, you're going to let it hit the bottom. You're going to let it tumble underneath. Underneath your structure in a river, kind of let it bounce off there. Because remember, it's cold and it's stunned. It's not going to be swimming back too much. So much is going to be tumbling in. So what I like to do is work my way down river this time of year instead of working up river. Okay. So as I go down river, I'm going to take that sculpin imitation or that Helgramite imitation. I'm going to cast it, let it hit the bottom. And my movements are going to be just enough to pick it off the bottom and let it keep tumbling down the river as it goes. And that's going to be probably your most effective situation. Going from there, going up on larger streamers, they're going to have a nice action, kind of a nice side to side, like a game changer or whatever. And what I want to do is I want to have a large motion that I can let it stop. So like the game changer is great because it's got a lot of big side to side action of the Cosmic Brownie that I tied my articulated streamer, which you can find on YouTube if you want to tie it. What I love about that is when you stop that fly, because it's got so much feather on it, it still continues to breathe and move. And that's what's so important. When you stop it, it's still moving. It still looks like it's alive. I do like to throw some rattles on there. And most of my streamers are going to be kind of 4 to 6 inches this time of year. So bigger stuff, right? And so, and then to get a little bit further on, you can move into now for both conventional and fly. If you're wanting to target those fish, they're targeting those gizzard shads. Some of those really big swim baits you can buy online are great. They use them in the California Delta a lot. They're huge. And if you're tying your own flies, you want to do like a beast fly or something like that, so that you've got that really big imitation, but it's easier to cast. And you just want to, again, slowly work this, these flies or that presentation, setting off of points, especially around creek mounts. And just remember, guys, be patient. It's going to be slow. It's going to be tough fishing, but it can be extremely rewarding. And a lot of times your biggest fish of the year are going to come out from conditions like this.
So that was a lot of information dropping. I got to say, that is the first time that I have ever seriously thought about salamanders as bass forage. And I, as you were talking about them, I looked up that lesser siren, whatever it is. And Yeah, of course, it's right there on the Outdoor Alabama website. It says that it's extremely common throughout the coastal plain. And
Sure is.
yeah, looking at it, I mean, it's just a little salamander with front legs and just
Yeah, so it's got that
fast
frill.
feet. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets pretty big too. I don't remember how big they get. They're not massive, but they get pretty decent size. Probably maybe 4 or 5 inches, I guess, somewhere in that ballpark. You got the Google up, so it's.
I'm looking here and yeah, they're saying 7 to 19 inches in length, which is
Yeah, so they get big.
yeah, I'm gonna
So
have to start looking for them.
think of that big culprit, soft plastic worm. Remember that huge long worm you got
Yeah.
when you were a kid, and everybody was like, "You ain't gonna catch nothing on that."
Yeah.
And suddenly you do catch fish on it. Well, what are they eating? Well, obviously they ain't eating 10-inch, 12-inch earthworms at the bottom of the bottom of the lake, but that's what they're eating. And
Yeah.
so that's what that does, because you look at the lesser siren, it's just got those two little arms and then the gill frill. That's it. But what are they seeing? They're seeing that big tail swimming around.
Yeah, and I mean that looks like one of those things that just looks like perfect bass food. Like I'm looking at the picture of this thing, and it's completely defenseless. Like no spines, like a bluegill, no pinchers, like a crawfish, no exoskeleton. I mean, it just looks like something that you could slurp up with abandon. I can that makes a lot of sense. That makes soft worms and soft plastics in general make a lot more sense. I've wondered my whole life if that really imitated anything, or if it just, was kind of like, and in my mind, you have the imitation lures, and then you have the cat toy lures, that are just designed to kind of aggravate, tantalize. But now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, that's probably why I've caught so many fish on a Texas rig worm. And like you said, a big one, like you can't go too
A
big
big
with
one
them.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't think about that. I told you before we started, I said I'm gonna drop some ecology on you guys today.
I like that. I like that.
So yeah, it's really fun.
Going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Bucks Island is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. That was a pretty thorough deep dive into winter fishing conditions. We talked bass, we talked crappie. So this year has been different. It's just now getting cold.
Yeah.
And like where I'm at, I'm looking out in my backyard and we did get some rain. It's a lot clearer than it usually is, but that rain did make it mud up a little bit. And that's always something that I struggle with is when you get the winter, you get the cold, and then you get the mud. What's your strategy? Do you just fish in the mud, or my strategy is usually I try to hunt for the stuff that clears up first. Like I've
I
never
always
had
try to
much
hunt for
luck
clear water
fighting,
stuff.
really.
Yeah, you're right. Clear water is easy. It's probably the best situation to go for. If I'm not able to find clear water, then I want to throw that big Colorado Blade spinnerbait. I want to throw those crankbaits and those big critter baits. And a lot of people say, okay, chartreuse will really let you see that bait in that water. And I'm sure there's some truth to that. I personally, in nasty dark water, I throw blacks and purples. I throw blacks and purples, and I feel like that kind of silhouettes really well. And that's true for me too. So if I'm throwing that fly, you've seen some of the ones I've got at when I had my store, those big streamers that are purple and black that are bigger in your hand. That's what I'm throwing. And you've got the rattle in it. It's a little bit more subtle. Places to find clear water. So one of the things you can do is if you have these areas where the vegetation hasn't been totally wiped out yet, vegetation is going to help to scrub that out pretty quick. So like, let's say I'm fishing lower delta. Okay. And the question is, hey, are there still bass in lower delta? The answer is yes. Are there as many? No. But that being said, using that redfish magic, we're fishing the channels. Let's say we're fishing in channels by the Blakely, or we're fishing in the channel over by where Appalachie drops in, and we're mostly targeting speckled trout and redfish. Will we find bass in there still? Yeah. Sure, not as many as we would later when we have more rain coming in, from up north, but they'll still be in there. And what we're doing in during, but in those delta areas, Okay. We get that heavy, heavy vegetation, right? What happens is that vegetation filters out a ton of that mud. The next thing you want to look for is places, let's say you want to go up to running water. Let's say the further upriver in the system you can get, the faster it will clear because there's just less water draining in. But here's the other thing, I really tell this to people all the time. Just remember, just because we can't see doesn't affect the bass. So their lateral line is going to take over a lot, and they can still see better in cloudy water than we think they can. And their sense of smell is going to take over, their lateral line is going to take over, and they can still see better than we think. And so just because it's really muddy for us, that doesn't mean that it's really bad for them. Okay. So keep that in mind. Another thing you too, like, okay, so weather coming up here soon, I believe we are on Saturday. It's going to be fairly warm. So on Saturday, let me take a look. So Friday's going to be 65. Saturday is going to be 66. We got that front coming in. Ahead of that front is going to be some rain, and that's going to be warmer water that's going to drop into the system. And so what you want to do then is just remember that first flush of that warmer water will actually bring fish to the top, even though it brought the mud in. And that muddier water during that first flush will actually make it so your artificial imitations more easily fool what you're fishing for, because they don't see it as clearly. Even though I said, hey, they see better than we think they do, they won't see as clearly. So there can be advantages to the muddy water too.
That's I've heard before, and I'm not at that level yet. I've heard people say there's no such thing as bad conditions, just bad tactics. And I've heard that before, that's the pro and the con of fishing is in muddy water is that they can't see as good, but they also can't see as good.
Right. And that's true. And
yeah, I rely a lot, man. You've had that conversation before is that, that redfish magic with that big Colorado blade. Like I feel like that's, I almost feel like we talk about it too much. I don't want too many people throwing it, 'cause I've caught a lot of fish on it, and I feel like it's that vibration, you know, like you can feel it through the rod tip. Yes. 50 yards out, you can cast it. And as soon as you start retrieving it, like you can tell if that blade is fouled or anything, you can feel hits, because you just steady feel that thrum on the end of it. And I just feel like that's the dinner bell, man.
Oh, I agree. One of my favorite things to do too, especially if I got the kids, I take a Johnson weedless spoon, mm-hmm. and then I throw like a soft plastic curly tail in the back of it. You know, that way the kids can pitch it, and it's got that flutter. Then you throw it in stuff, and it won't get hung up as badly. But it's got that extra vibration, you know, that extra curly tail on it. And also too, I don't know if it really helps that much, but you know, it's also, you kind of mix and match it, you know, maybe throw a chartreuse tail on the back of it, or throw something else on it. So you kind of find what works for you. And so that's another good thing you can do. Spoons. And spoons used to be a lot more prolific thing people threw for bass too back in the day. So if you look at your papaw's tackle box, he's probably got some gold spoons in it. And one of the things they would do this time of year is they would bring it off the side and let it drop, and it would flutter down. And a lot of times that bass would take it on the drop. And that's also another great way to target suspending bass is with not a weedless spoon, but ordinary spoon that you let drop.
You know, so it's a while back we had Steve Graziano. He mentioned a spoon. And then I've been reading through Jay Henshaw's Book of the Black Bass. And it's funny. Like he mentions for artificials, conventional tackle, you know, like for fly fishing, he's talking about all the old wet flies that they used to fish and everything. Which is really interesting just from a history and culture point of view, that there's no mention of popping bugs or woolly buggers or anything like that. Like he's fishing like McGinty's and different like winged or palmered flies. But for conventional, he's like, yeah, you can't beat a spoon. He's like, there's a lot of other baits. Like he was writing it, you know, just as you were starting to see a lot of artificial baits come up. And he's like, yeah, he's like, just a spoon. He's like, I've caught more just on a spoon than anything else. And you're right. You don't see it. Like down here, I think the only thing I really see people use a spoon for is redfish.
And which it works really well. Kind of what I always like to kind of remind people is these, you know, our tactics and our bait have changed, but these fish haven't changed in millions of years. So what still worked good during the 40s and 50s and 20s will still work well now. What we actually see is that a lot of these older techniques, older lures, older things we used to do, are extremely effective now, and sometimes more so effective than what we're doing all the time, because just like anything else, you know, the good thing is we're in a more catch and release sort of world for bass fishing. There's still a ton of folks like to take a mess fish home, but there's a much more, much more prone to catch and release. So these fish may have already been caught on a more common tactic. They've probably already seen a Texas rig. They've probably already seen spinner baits. They've probably already, you know, had this, that, or the other happen. We've all caught bass. We can see them hooked previously. But so those tactics may not be as effective as going back to something, pulling that that trick out of your papaw's book of throwing that spoon. It can still be super good. I love throwing a weedless spoon in really weedy conditions, like lily pads and whatnot, because you get on top of that lily pad, you can work it in really fast. It'll just kind of skip over the top of the water. Bass will smoke it. They can't stand it. So used to, we had a lure called the Moss Boss back in the day, and it was a plastic spoon. So it was a lot easier to keep on top of the water.
Yeah, that's one thing about a spoon is that, yeah, they're real hard to fish shallow. But I'm looking forward to it this year. I've got it on my list after talking with Graz and reading Book of the Black Bass. I want to try fishing more with just a plain old spoon, and then I want to fish some of those old wet flies, get them out in the creek a little bit, and bass fish a little bit with just some of the old, you know, soft tackle winged wet flies. And I want to circle back. I apologize to the listeners. We've been pretty fly heavy this week, but that's kind of where my mind's at. I've been doing a little bit of tying, getting ready for the spring. But you mentioned earlier, Peter, like we talked on muddy water, you know, that a lot of it was, you know, bass became less visual and they focused more on scent and they focused more on their lateral line, talking about a bait that moves water. And that's something I've really struggled with tying flies. What's your best tip for patterns or how to make a fly move water? Because that's hard to do without a blade or a prop.
Yeah, it can be. So there's two things you can do. One thing, if you're throwing a big streamer, you can actually put like a disc on the front of it. So like when you throw your fly, you know, like you can take like a gold, like go to Hobby Lobby, you can get a gold sequin. Okay? Like just one of those big old ones. And there's some that are about the size of a quarter that you can buy on downsize. So what you can actually do is take a hot needle, burn a hole in the center, and put that on your leader before you put your fly on. And that disc is going to push water as it goes. It changes the action of the fly, but it's going to push a lot of water. Another thing you can do is palm or a lot more hackle. It's like a woolly booger, works really well. And you can do big woolly boogers too, because it pushes water. It makes a lot of vibration. I really like throwing rattles in on my flies this time of year. The next thing you want to remember is the way you build a fly. If you want that side-to-side action, it's going to push a lot of water. If you want the front of the fly to be really, really wide, right, and it tapers down, and that's going to help push that water really, really well. One thing I do kind of caution people is it's really easy to mess up a fly by adding too much material trying to get that bulk. So there's a ton of wonderful techniques you can use to kind of get more of that in, more vibration in there, more water-pushing ability. But a really simple answer is, and this is something that they do a lot in Scandinavia for pike fishing, is to put what they call, just put that push disc on the front. And all you're doing is taking, like, I like to use like a big gold sequin or a black sequin or whatever. You get them at Hobby Lobby. Like I said, they're about the size of a quarter, a nickel, dime, and just make it appropriate to the size fly you're throwing. Burn that little hole in it, and it'll push a lot of water. So that's one quick, fast, easy way to do it.
Yeah, I like that. I played last year with some streamers that kind of had some deer hair on them to push some hair. And then played with, I think you turned me on to the seducer pattern, which is kind of like a, you know, once you understand it and start tying them, you're like, well, that's kind of like a woolly bugger on steroids. Like that's a lot of hacking. Yeah. That's good. I'd never thought about a sequin. I'm going to have to make a run to Hobby Lobby.
There you go. Yeah, so like a B-chain seducer, like I tie, it's a shrimp. It's a minnow. It's a bull minnow. It's a little, I don't know what the hell it is. It just works. I mean, that's kind of like the whole argument for a spinnerbait. What's spinnerbait? Meh. Who knows? It works.
That's one of those baits I put in that cat toy category. Doesn't really look like anything. It just looks tasty and aggravating.
Yeah, it just looks tasty and aggravating. Yeah, and that's what my wife generally talks, you know, refers to me as. He's just aggravating. I don't know if it's tasty, but at least I'm aggravating.
That's funny. I think my wife was that way too. I think we don't get cabin fever as bad as they do up north, but I know I got a buddy from New Jersey and he says that he always, his wife gets a little short with him in the winter months when they're cooped up together. Uh-huh. It's good for the sun to come back out and they can get a little time apart, a little time to love each other again.
That's right. But yeah, brother. Yeah. Well, that's what's going on right now. That's what's going on in my neighborhood.
Perfect. That's a good report. Peter, it's always a pleasure to have you on. If folks want to keep track of you, where's a good place to look you up?
Well, you can check on Instagram. You can just follow Lost Angler. I have been slow and terrible at posting videos on YouTube. Hopefully that'll change soon. And you can kind of also check my buddy Pete Capel. His YouTube channel is Skiff Wander. We just did a series of about 7 videos called Lost and Wandering. So that's a playlist on his YouTube channel where we went through North Carolina and Georgia and Alabama, and we fished together. And we got to fish with a bunch of different fly shops and different guides and such. So you can see everything from spotted bass to stripers to red eye to brown trout to rainbow trout to brook trout, and also kind of lets you kind of meet the fly shops in that area and meet the people that make these cool adventures we have possible.
Sounds like a good resource. I know I've caught a couple of them. I need to catch up on the whole thing. But yeah, guys, go check out Peter. Peter, be safe. Stay warm out there.
Appreciate it, buddy. We'll catch you next time.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by... Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year, or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, that's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Killer Dock. Combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also brought to you by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.